Rav Tavori, welcome back to Torah Motion. You've given many shiurim for us. Thank you, and a pleasure to have you. And Rav Tavori teaches at Yeshivat Eretz Hatzvi. He lives in Gush Etzion. He's teaching Camp Rabbi at Camp Stone for many summers. Not this summer, but that's where you gave the shiur 4 a.m. online this summer. Anyways, pleasure welcome back. I apologize, but we're a couple minutes behind schedule, but we're doing quite well. So, Bakasha, go ahead. Zecher leMikdash and Zecher leChurban.
Shalom lekulam. This is very overwhelming. I told someone before that as a child growing up in my father's home, We weren't allowed to learn any type of Torah growing up. And Rabbi Soloveitchik famously used to give shirim on kinot. But when I grew up as a child, I wasn't familiar with having shirim on Tisha B'Av. And I think it's very, very special how more and more people are involved in learning topics to do with Tisha B'Av. I think it really exposes people to the ideas of the Churban and Galut and Geulah and really creates a real meaningful Tisha B'Av. So thank you, Torah Motion. Thank you, Rabbi Kelman, for the opportunity. Tisha B'Av, as we all know, I hope people can hear me because some people wrote that, I'm going to talk a bit louder, so people wrote to me that my microphone wasn't working well. Am I okay now? Can you hear me well? Okay.
I hear you fine, but I don't know about anybody else. I hear you fine.
Okay. The Seder. So the essence of Tisha B'Av, as we all know it, is a day which our rabbis combined two different ideas together. They combined the idea of ta'anit, of fasting, together with the idea of avilut, of mourning. We have, during the year, many days of ta'anit. Almost all of them are somehow connected to the motif of destruction, of Churban, specifically the Churban of Beit HaMikdash. But the idea of mourning, the idea of Avilut, that we take the message of Avilut very seriously and we live this idea of mourning, is obviously felt on the fast day of Tisha B'Av. Those are the two themes of Tisha B'Av that Chazal created in order for us to have a collective memory of the events that took place almost 2,000 years ago. One could argue that the difference between Ta'anit, between fasting, and Avilut is what they focus on. Perhaps the Ta'anit, the purpose of the fast, is a little bit different than the purpose of the mourning, of the Avilut. The Avilut focuses on the past, on the events that took place thousands of years ago. And in order for us to connect to them, we behave as mourners, just like we would behave if one of our relatives, Lo Aleinu, would pass away. So we do today, in the past few days, we act accordingly to the laws of Avilut, of mourning, in order to bring the past up to our days and to connect us to the events that took place. The Ta'anit, however, may focus on the future. Perhaps we fast today in order for us to take this Avilut to our days and to ask ourselves, where do we go with the fact that we mourn the loss of the Mikdash? What is the purpose of mourning? Is the purpose of mourning just to remember the past, just to remember the tragedy, or is it for the future? When we fast, the essence of fast, as the Rambam very famously writes, the essence of the fast day is to do tshuva, is to repent on the past of Averot, in order for us to learn from our mistakes and correct the past in order to build a better future. If you want, Binyan Beit HaMikdash. The fast and the ta'anit and the tshuva is supposed to take us from the avilut to a time when the Beit HaMikdash will be built as a result of us learning from our mistakes. So Chazal dealt here with the destruction of the temple in two different ways, Ta'anit and Avilut, and Tisha B'Av combines them both. However, there is a third way which Chazal dealt with the meaning of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And I would like in today's shiur to focus on the third piece of Chazal's ideas of how one can deal with tragedy. And that is the third circle of Zikaron, of remembrance. This idea of remembrance is a very, very profound idea in Judaism. Many mitzvot in the Torah mention the idea of Zikaron. For example, we have the famous Zichirot that some tzaddikim say every day at the end of davening. At the end of the Siddur of Shacharis, there is a mention, a list of the six psukim in the Torah that the Torah tells us, you shall remember. We are all familiar, of course, with the famous Zachor et Asher Asah Lecha Amalek. Some of us remember Zachor et Yom HaShabbat because we see it in Kiddush. But there are other psukim that the Torah reminds us that we should remember the past. Zachor et Asher Asah Hashem Elokecha LeMiriam. We must remember what happened to Miriam. We must remember Mamad Har Sinai. This week's parsha of Etchanan, we read about that we should not forget Mamad Har Sinai. And of course, we have Yom HaZikaron. The day of Rosh Hashanah is called Yom HaZikaron. And in modern days, Medinat Israel developed an entire day called Yom HaZikaron for Chayalei Tzal. Remembering in Judaism, in our tradition, is a very, very important piece of our tradition and of our identity. But the question which I intend to try to answer is, what is the purpose of the Zikaron? Obviously, when we have our memories of events that took place in our lives, then those are personal memories that we actually lived with them. We were alive when they happened and we remember them and they are part of who we are. But what's the idea of what we call a collective memory? A memory of an event that took place before we were born. The idea that we call it a memory is even difficult because the Churban Beit HaMikdash and all the tragedies that befall them, the Jewish people, or even the Havdil, the positive events like Mamad Har Sinai, Yitziat Mitzrayim, all these events happened before we were born. And yet, we must remember them. A memory, as I mentioned, is usually an event that took place in our lives that we remember. And yet the Torah refers to them as memories and commands us to remember the past. What are the purpose of these mitzvot to remember the past? I believe that we can argue that there are two main reasons why is it so for the past. One, I think, is a very practical one. If we wish one day to rebuild the temple, in the case of obviously remembering the destruction of the temple, then we cannot yearn to building the Mikdash if we don't remember its destruction. They're almost a very practical way of understanding the idea to remember. There is a very famous story, and as I was looking up the story today, I found many, many references to it in modern times, whether or not the story occurred or not. Many people argue that it never happened, but it's a very, very famous legend. And even if it didn't happen, it's okay to mention it, the story about Napoleon. When I read about the story about how Napoleon met some Jews crying on the night of Tisha B'Av, according to what I Googled today, I found that this story took place in at least 10 different cities around the world and different times, which means that it's probably an urban legend and perhaps it never happened. But the idea, we all grew up with this story about how Napoleon hears the Jews lamenting and saying kinot and crying, and he was so shocked that people are crying because he didn't remember in his days any temple being destroyed. And when he was explained that it was explained to him that the Jews were crying for an event that happened over 1,000 years ago, he famously made the statement that if a people can cry an event that takes place such a long time, there is no doubt that they will also build it one day. Right? This idea that memory is needed in order for us to continue the yearning to build the Beit HaMikdash is obviously a very important message. But there perhaps might be a second reason for the idea of a collective memory that Chazal were so creative in developing. And that is to connect us to our past and to our identity. We know that the night of Pesach, the idea of Chayav Adam Lirot et Atzmo Ke'ilu Hu Yatzah Mimitzrayim is a motif of the night of Pesach. We eat the matzah, and we lean, and we sit in a certain way and drink the wine, all in order for us to relive the events that took place. On the night of Shavuot, we stay up at night in order to relive Ma'amad Har Sinai. We don't just mention the past, we relive the past. In order for us to put ourselves in those events throughout Jewish history, because they create a Jewish identity of who we are as a people. We all left Egypt. This idea that Geirim, for example, I think we just mentioned it, Rabbi Kelman will probably remember in the Daf Yomi not so long ago, that the Geirim were on Har Sinai. Why is that important? The idea is that everyone that is part of the Jewish people lives through the Jewish history. It's not just a far memory of the past. It's a real happening event that's occurring right now in our lives. That is part of the memory demand that we require in our Chagim and our Shabbatot and every day of the week. We have to remember and relive these events in order to create a collective history that we are all part of. Which brings me to the idea that Zikaron is hardly ever done in Judaism in your mind. The idea of Zichira, to remember, sometimes can be done in our minds without even doing any action. But in many of the cases of the Torah's requirement to remember, there is an action that goes along with the memory. In fact, when it comes to remember Amalek, the Gemara talks about how there is a need to read it, but not balev, not in your heart, but rather bapeh. You must mention it. You must say the words. The mitzvot of Zikaron are connected to an action. In order to relive the memory, you must act upon it. There must be a physical act. I just mentioned all the mitzvot that are connected to Pesach and other chagim that really relive the actions. We live the events, and by doing that, we remember those events. Chazal, when it comes to the destruction of the temple, had, I believe, these ideas in their minds, they wanted us to relive Tisha B'Av. They wanted us to relive the Churban, to remember the Churban as if it happened just yesterday, just moments ago. We mourn the Churban as we would mourn a loss of a relative. we practice the same customs that we would act if a relative would pass away. The difference is, Chazal call this avilut yeshana versus avilut chadasha. Chazal have words for the differences between that mourning on a personal relative to the mourning on the events that took place thousands of years ago. Avilut chadasha is new avilut, referring to avilut on a relative, while avilut yeshana, an old, ancient avilut, is a model of avilut very similar, but focusing on past events that occurred many, many years ago. These mitzvot, these customs that our rabbis created in order for us to remember the past, have another very important idea, and I would like to focus on those ideas today. And that is the idea of easing the pain and dealing with a new world in which there is no temple. Chazal, when they talked about mitzvot of Zecher HaMikdash or Zecher HaChurban, when they made certain mitzvot, which we will discuss very soon, that we have to remember the temple, remember the destruction, I believe we're referring to a classic reaction that people go through whenever tragedy strikes them. May it be a personal and private tragedy or a national tragedy. The reaction is, what do we do now? Where do we go from where we are? Life is over. Life will never be the same. How do we wake up tomorrow morning? How do we continue life when someone close and dear to us dies? That is the first feeling. All is over. The world is over. As we know it, it will never be the same. Avelut, the laws of Avelut, the laws of what Chazal created, I believe, are there to help us deal with the new reality. It was our luck as a people that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, the great Tana, who the rabbis talk about as one of the greatest characters in Jewish history when it comes to Torah knowledge, but it wasn't just Torah knowledge, it was a sensitivity, an understanding that the tragedy of the Churban Beit HaMikdash created a great fear that Jewish life would never be the same, and perhaps it would end, the Jewish traditional life as we know it would end with the destruction of the temple. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai realized that if he doesn't make changes to Judaism as we know it, people will not be able to continue practicing their religion and their tradition, because so much was based upon the temple. So much was connected to the Avodah in the Beit HaMikdash. And furthermore, when the tragedy struck, there was a feeling of despair. There was a feeling that God had left his people. There is no coincidence that Christianity begins at the same time, the same century of the Churban Beit HaMikdash. I'm, of course, referring to Jesus and the story of Jesus. It happens at the same time because for many people, the Churban of the Beit HaMikdash, the destruction of the temple, made people feel that maybe the covenant between the Jewish people and the Baruch Hu is finished. That's it. So people like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had to deal with so many problems that were occurring at the time. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, as the Gemara, this is not talking about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, this is talking about Rabbi Yeshua, but nevertheless, it's a similar idea. The Gemara and Baba Batra, and if you look at your source sheets, I have it in English and in Hebrew. I will read the Midrash from the Gemara in Baal Batra. You can look at the translation on your sheets, but I will read the Gemara itself. A famous midrash that I think explains part of what we just said now. Shecharava Bayit Bashniya, when the second temple was destroyed. Rabu Purushim B'Yisrael. There were many people, traditional Jews, who took upon themselves many stringencies, and they separated themselves from the way of life, as if they were saying, life is over. We cannot continue to live anymore in a world without a temple. Is there any room for our life to continue? And one of the first things that they said that they cannot do is, lo lechol basar velo lishtot yain. We are not allowed to eat meat or drink wine. Rabbi Yeshua asked them for this custom that they began. And he said to them, Banai, mipnei ma iatem ochlim basar ve'ein atem shotim yain. What is the reason for these stringencies that you've taken upon yourself? Amrula, how can we eat meat? Shimimenu makirvim al gabei amizbeach ve'achshav batel. Rabbi Yeshua, until now, meat was always associated with a korban, with a sacrifice in the Beit HaMikdash. Wine? Wine was poured over the Mizbeach, over the altar. How can we eat meat? How can we drink wine? It's impossible for us to fathom a world without a Mikdash. Amar lem, Rabbi Yeshua answered them, Im ken, according to you, according to that logic, Lechem lo nochal, shekvar batlu menachot. Bread should not be eaten anymore, because bread is also sacrificed in the Beit HaMikdash. And what about fruit? We can't eat fruit, because fruit were brought to the Beit HaMikdash in the form of the Bikurim. Wait a second, he goes on. What about water? Water is also poured over the Mizbeach, over the Chag of Sukkot. So maybe we should stop drinking water according to this logic. He's basically telling them, Chavirim, life has to go on. The Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, but we must continue living. Aye, how can we continue living in a world without a Mikdash? The answer is, we must combine certain customs to remind us of the Churban. And he gave them a few examples. He said, Kach amru chachamim, the rabbis made up some customs. Sad adam et beito besid u'misher bo davar mu'at. There's a minag, which I actually don't know, maybe Rabbi Kelman can answer me about how many people keep this minhag today. It's not a very common minhag. In Eretz Yisrael, it's more of a common minhag, that people leave part of their homes, at least a square of a meter by a meter, or half a meter by half a meter, they leave a square in their house unfinished. Rabbi Kelman?
Almost nobody does it here. I don't know if I've ever, maybe one house I've seen, if I can remember. It's like, the Maritz Chayitz has an essay about halachas that are not observed in his Kokipe Maritz Chayitz. He has a fascinating essay in general, halachot. And this, of course, is one of the halachot he mentions. Of course, in Israel, where they have less need for it, but obviously the people in Israel are more sensitive. That's why they're in Israel, and I'm in Toronto. I got Musser the last year about that. So you can also get Musser on Tisha B'Av. Whatever. But yes, it's almost never observed. By the way, I know you didn't share your source sheet. It's okay. I don't know much. If you want to share it so people can see.
I just thought that people had
it. Whatever you prefer, I think. No one complained yet, but I'm just letting you.
I may share it soon.
Anyways, I only interrupted because you asked me to.
Yes, that's fine. By the way, in my house, we bought our house, and we didn't build it. So it was already made without the Amma. But a friend of mine gave us a present of this Gemara on a picture. So we put that picture at our entrance of our house, that it says you're supposed to leave an amma of your house unpainted. So if we didn't do the original mitzvah, at least we have the mussar on the wall telling us that we should do so. The Gemara mentions other minhagim, customs that, again, I am not aware of anyone, even Israel, following these customs. The Gemara mentions oseh adam kol tzorchei se'uda u'mesher davar mu'at. When you make a meal, when you prepare a meal, you should leave some of the cutlery, some of the dishes on the side, remembering that the mikdash is not there. Or food, actually, you should leave the food. Some of the food you should prepare food that you shouldn't put on the table. Osa isha kol tachshitea, when a woman gets dressed up with all her jewelry, mishayeret davar mu'at, she should leave some of her jewelry on the side and not dress up with her jewelry. I will mention one other famous zecher lachurban that, again, is not always fulfilled in the same way that it was supposed to be. Then, and that is, of course, the minhag at weddings, breaking the glass at a wedding. When we break a glass at a wedding, even though the Gemara seems to argue that the original source has to do with breaking the simcha in order for people not to be too happy in their simcha, but there is good indication that the idea of breaking a glass under the chuppah and also putting ashes on the forehead of the chatan, a custom which my father did to me at my own wedding, these customs at a wedding are more familiar, and the chatan and the kala at that point say imishkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yemini. For some crazy reason, everyone screams mazel tov at that moment, which really is exactly the opposite of what we're trying to create. That's why in modern days today, I've seen more and more weddings in which they break the glass in the middle of the chuppah in order for not the breaking of the glass to end with like the happiness of the chuppah. But that's really the idea, is to create a sad and somber atmosphere at that moment to remember Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash. And the Gemara brings a pasuk. What is the source in the Torah that teaches us that we should remember Yerushalayim in our simcha, during our life? The famous pasuk, Shene'emar, Im eshkachech Yerushalayim, tishkach yemini, tibak leshoni lechiki, im lo ezkarechi, im lo aale et Yerushalayim al rosh simchati. The pasuk in Tehillim, which tells us that we should remember Yerushalayim, we should remember Yerushalayim al rosh simchati. When we are in our happiest of moods, that's when we should remember Yerushalayim. I'm not going to go into it, but there is another very interesting minhag, which again is not kept today, that has to do with the churban of Yerushalayim, and that has to do with music. People discuss listening to music in the 3 weeks, in the 9 days. The original idea of not listening to music does not refer to the 3 weeks. It actually refers to the entire year. I'm not going to go into that discussion right now because there are many, many heterim for us today to listen to music, but it's interesting to point out that the original idea of banning music has to do with Zecher Lachurban. So that's the Gemara in Baba Batra. However, there is a fascinating Gemara in Masechet Sukkah, and I will at this point share the Daf Mekorot, and you will see that the Gemara in Sukkah is connected, of course, to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The Gemara mentions that, as we already spoke about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he made many takanot, many decrees, many customs he renewed as a result of the churban, of the destruction. The Mishnah tells us at least two of them here. Barishona hayalulav nital b'mikdash shiva uvamidina yom echad. In the beginning, in the Beit HaMikdash, they used to shake the arba minim all 7 days. But b'medina, outside the Mikdash, only one day. The Torah really tells us, "Ulekachtem lachem b'yom arishon." You're supposed to carry the Arba Minim on the first day of Chag. However, in the Beit HaMikdash, due to the Pasuk Usmachtem Lifnei Hashem Elokechem Shivatimim, due to the command to be happy, to rejoice before God all 7 days, the custom was to carry the Arba Minim all 7 days. Mishecharav Beit HaMikdash, when the temple was destroyed, Hitkin Abba Yochanan ben Zakkai, came along Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and said, remember we're talking about Zecher, Zikaron. We have to remember the Mikdash. And therefore, after the Churban, from now on, we must shake the Lulav all 7 days. We must remember what happened in the Mikdash and we must relive what was done in the Mikdash by carrying the Lulav all 7 days. The Mishnah, by the way, mentions another takana. I'm not going to go to many takanot he made. Shiyeh yom hanetz kulo asur. I'm not going to go that this is really a shir of itself to discuss all the takanot that Rabbi Nachman Zakkai did. The Gemara, referring to this idea of Rabbi Nachman Zakkai, questions minalan da'avdinan zecher lamikdash. From where do we learn that we must do a Zecher LaMikdash? And here, HaBen Shoel, here we should stop a second and say, wait a second, we just learned the Gemara in Baba Batra. We just learned this question. We also looked for a source. How does one remember the temple? How does one do a Zecher LaChurban? And we read the Pasuk from Tehillim. Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yemini. You're not supposed to forget Yerushalayim. Surely, that would be the pasuk that the Gemara mentions here. And yet, the Gemara here brings another pasuk. What is the pasuk? The Gemara quotes a pasuk, Ki ale aruchalach umimakotayich erpaech ne'um Hashem. Ki nidacha karulach tzionhi doresh ein la. This pasuk, this pasuk is referring to the fact that there is no one that is doresh for Tzion. No one is demanding Zion. And therefore, the Gemara understands, miklal debai drisha. This pasuk in Yirmiyahu is teaching us that we need to be doresh tzion. We need to look for tzion. We need to mention tzion in our lives. And therefore the Gemara says that this is the pasuk that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai referred to when he made a zecher lamikdash. And of course, my question, which will be the most important question of today's shir, is why is there a need for two separate psukim to teach us that we must remember the past? Why do we need two psukim for Chazal to create new customs, mitzvot, minhagim? Let's make a list, by the way, of other Zecher LaMikdashes that we all know. If this would be a frontal shiur, which it is half frontal shiur, I would probably go around the room and people would start yelling out, Korech, the night of Pesach, when we eat the matzah as a sandwich, we mention that we eat the Korech as a Zecher LaMikdash, Kehillel. Another Zecher LaMikdash is going around the Bima on Sukkot with our Aravot. We walk around the Bima every day, and on Hoshana Rabbah 7 days. That is not just a Bima, that's supposed to be the Mizbeach, because in the Beit HaMikdash they walked around the Bima. Some might argue that lighting Chanukah candles till today is a Zecher LaMikdash, especially our custom to light Chanukah candles in the shul. Why do we light Chanukah candles in the shul? Some Rishonim argue because a shul is like a temple, like a Beit Mikdash, and it reminds us of the menorah. So the idea is Zecher LaMikdash. In fact, if we had more time, we would prove that many of the halachot that have to do with the lighting of the Chanukiah refer to the lighting of the menorah of the Beit HaMikdash, which really explains that Chanukiah is a Zecher LaMikdash. And what about the custom of dancing on the days of Sukkot in a party called Simchat Beit HaShoeva. In the times of the temple over Sukkot, they would pour water, as we just mentioned, over the Mizbeach, and they would dance and sing. And the Mishnah talks about Mi Shelo Ra'ah Simchat Beit HaShoeva, those who have never seen the festivals of the pouring of the water festivals, has never seen simcha, happiness, in his life. Today, all around the Jewish world, the custom is to relive these simchot bet ha-shoeva, dancing and singing. Zecher la-migdash. So again, I ask, why is there a need for two different gemarot with two different psukim? In my searches, I have found that two rabbis have asked this question. One of them is Rav Shlomo Goren, who was the chief rabbi of Israel and the chief rabbi of the Israeli army, who in his book Torah Mo'adim, this is a book, I can show you the cover of the book here. In Torah Mo'adim, he has an article called Halichot HaChurban, the laws of the Churban. And he refers to many of the topics that we just spoke about. But he explains that there are two different tracks here. One track, the track of Imishkachech Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini, is specifically about remembering Yerushalayim, that we're remembering the loss of the city of Yerushalayim, which used to be the Ir Melucha, the capital of Israel, as well as the home of the temple. Yerushalayim and its meaning stands by itself. And when we mourn for the Beit HaMikdash, we must mourn separately to Yerushalayim and all what it symbolizes. That is Imishkachech Yerushalayim, that is the Gemara in Masechet Baba Batra. However, the Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that talks about Zecher LaMikdash, that's specifically referring to the Mikdash itself. And therefore, all the customs that we do today refer to the Mikdash. They are a Zecher LaMikdash. Now, this idea, by the way, is a very interesting idea. And I think that it's, one could argue that this theme of separating the Churban of Yerushalayim to the Churban of the Mikdash is found in other areas of Halacha. For example, when it comes to tearing your garments, when one sees the destruction of Israel. The Gemara recalls that if one is walking in the by Yerushalayim, one tears their garment when one sees the destruction of Yerushalayim. And when one walks further into Yerushalayim and sees and notices the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, a new tearing in your garment must be done. Here again, we recognize that we separate the mourning on Yerushalayim to the mourning of the Beit HaMikdash. That's Rav Goren's suggestion, why there are two separate sugyot, why there are two different terms, Zecher LaMikdash and Zecher LaChurban. However, I found the same question asked by Rabbi Soloveitchik and mentioned in his book on Masechet Sukkah, and here I will read together with you the words of Rabbi Soloveitchik as he explains the need for two different tracks, if you might call them, one a Zecher LaMikdash and one a Zecher LaChurban. And being Rav Soloveitchik, being him being a classic brisker, of course, he explains that the two tracks are two dinim, are two halachot of how one refers to the loss of the temple. I'm reading. Aleph, Hilchot Avilut Zecher LaMikdash, the laws of mourning, of remembering the Mikdash, the Gemara in Baba Batra, is the Pasuk in Mishkachech Yerushalayim. Behu Lizkor Yerushalayim Kefi Shehaita Ulitabel Chorbana. The second, right, to mourn the past, to mourn the destruction, to feel the pain of the lack of the Beit HaMikdash, that it's not in our lives. Zecher LaMikdash, however, Vasilovich explains, Din Lizkor et Mitzvot HaKshurot LaMikdash to remember the mitzvah of the Mikdash, la'alot al libeinu et ha-mikdash k'shiyeh bevinyano. This refers to the mitzvah of the future, remembering the mitzvah, the Beit HaMikdash, how it was built in the past, but in order for us to yearn for its building in the future. We're not focusing on the Churban here. We're actually focusing on the life of the Mikdash, when it was built, when it was an active place, when festivals occurred there. That's the purpose of Zecher LaMikdash. Perhaps Rav Soloveitchik explains that this is the deep meaning of, in source number 3, the pasuk of Eicha that we read last night, Zachra Yerushalayim Yemei Onya Umerudea, and also Kol Machmudea Asherayim Mekedim. Zachra, the verb that we're talking about, remembering, Yerushalayim remembers two different times in its history. It remembers Yimei Onya Umerudea. It remembers the difficult times of tragedy, of Churban, but it also remembers Kol Machamudea. It remembers the days of the glory of Yerushalayim, of the festival side of Yerushalayim. When Chazal created this idea of Zecher, of remembering Yerushalayim, Chazal needed to focus on the two different tracks to remember Yerushalayim. One, to remember Yerushalayim and its glory, which makes us yearn to build the Beit HaMikdash and relive the beauty and the glory of the Mikdash. And the other track is to remember its past, its painful past and its painful tragedies. It's very interesting that I'll just mention, I see we have not much time, but I'll just mention really quickly that there is a famous question regarding Sfirat HaOmer. As we know, there's a mitzvah to count the days between Pesach and Shavuot. The question is, does that mitzvah today apply on a biblical level, on a rabbinical level? The Rishonim argue. The Rambam thinks it's biblical, and other Rishonim thinks it's rabbinical. The Balaam Or, one of the great Rishonim, asks a very interesting question. He asks, why is there no Shechianu recited the first night of Sfirat HaOmer like we do in every time we have a new mitzvah? The night of Pesach, when we eat matzah, we make a Shechianu. When we light Chanukah candles, we make a Shechianu. Why is there no Shechianu on the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer? And his answer is, because it's a Zecher LaMikdash. And thus, being a Zecher LaMikdash, when we count the Omer, it makes us sad, and we don't feel a need to be joyful and happy at that moment. And therefore, Shechianu is an antithesis of a Zecher LaMikdash. Of course, this is not very simple, because according to Balaam Or, he understands that Sfirat Omer is Zecher LaChurban. No one would think that on Simcha Bet HaShoeva, or when we shake lulav, we're supposed to cry. The intention was not for us to cry when we dance Simcha Bet HaShoeva, but rather to rejoice and to be happy in our Simcha of Sukkot, and to remind us of the Simcha of the Mikdash. And therefore, the Baal HaMa'or is very interesting. One could argue with him that really Sfirat HaOmer is a Zecher LaMikdash, not a Zecher LaChurban. That's just one example of how there's a difference in what Zecher LaChurban creates to what Zecher LaMikdash does. I believe that this idea of Chazal is a profound one which follows us throughout our lives, these two models, these two tracks of commemoration. Today, I'll give you an example when it's very popular and very common for groups, for Jewish groups, schools, and communities to go to Poland. When I was a child, many years ago in the 80s, that's when the first trips started, taking us Israeli high school kids to Poland. And I remember at the time that they took us from one death camp to the other. And we focused on the death camps, on how Jews were killed in the Holocaust. However, I'm happy to hear that today, the whole ideology behind his trips have changed drastically. Today, if I'm not mistaken, and again, Roy Kelman can probably help me out with this because he has experience. Today, the educational structures of these trips is focusing on the life of the Jewish population before the Holocaust. People visit the villages and celebrate the life that existed before the Holocaust. Now, that also, focusing on the life before the Holocaust also creates pain and creates a ga'agua, some kind of feeling of missing the past and wishing to connect to the past. But it's not the same as focusing on the destruction and the tragic idea of the Shoah. I believe that when we commemorate losses, one must focus on both elements. We must, on one hand, sit on the ground, tear kriya, sit shiva, mourn and cry for the loss, but we must also focus on how life was before. We must celebrate the life that was. We must connect ourselves to the beauty of the life that was. I believe that this is true about what Chazal were doing by creating two tracks of Zecher LaMikdash and Zecher LaChurban. I believe it's true how we should relate today to the Holocaust. And I believe that it's also a way for us to commemorate our private losses of our beloved ones, people that we are connected to, relatives, close friends that pass away. There are also two ways to commemorate their loss. If you want one bechina, one track of Zecher LaMikdash and one Zecher LaChurban, we can cry and share sorrow and pain when we remember our beloved ones, and yet we are also commanded to celebrate their lives and their ideas and their Torah and their mitzvot and their wisdom and their stories. We must celebrate their lives also in order to commemorate them and to remember them. So to sum it up, I believe that when Chazal introduced after the Churban two different tracks, as Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, one we call Zecher LaChurban, one Zecher LaMikdash, they were focusing on memory, on the collective memory. They were enhancing the collective memory of the Jewish people, not just as a memory in our minds, but they added actions to it, as we do in Judaism. We don't just remember. We have to act upon memories. They connected real actions to commemorating, to remembering the Beit HaMikdash, and they did it in two separate tracks that are very different in their essence. And the results are very different, but both of them together create a collective memory of the past and hopefully create a yearning for the future, for a dream and a hope to build the Beit HaMikdash once again. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Let me throw out a question, if I may, or if you want to comment. Now that we're back in, or at least you're back in Medinat Yisrael, I have if you want to comment on maybe how that's affecting the relationship between Zecher LaChurban and Zecher LaMikdash. In other words, is there a diminishing, and should there be a diminishing of Zecher LaChurban? Maybe, you know, a relaxation a little bit of the 90s. I don't mean to get into country, but just really, you know, like, I think it's hard living in Israel to feel the 9 days the same way that, you know, living in the shtetl in Europe. I mean, of course, it's hard in Canada too, but especially in Israel, where it's hard in Canada because life is good. It's hard in Israel also, but it's sort of theologically hard in Israel, religiously hard.
I agree. I'm a lot to say about that. First of all, I'll say that it could very well be that the balance of Zecher LaMikdash in our days would be more appropriate for the collective memory than the Zecher LaChurban, perhaps. Maybe as a result of what you just said. I agree, though, in a practical sense, I agree that, for example, when it comes to the bracha of Nachem that is said in Mincha, I personally today omitted the sentence of Nachem. I know there is a lot of customs and a lot of opinions of how should Nachem be said today in Israel, even outside of Israel. How can you say some of the words there that are not true anymore and are not recognizing the goodness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How can we say that Yerushalayim is empty and there is no one? You just, I was there for the last few minutes of the Rabbi Zvitovsky before me, who showed you pictures of kids playing in the streets of Yerushalayim. So you're right. And as a result, I think that should also be translated in action and in the way we say Nachem. I agree. This also has to do with the laws of Kriya. Should one tear Kriya today the same way one used to tear Kriya on Yerushalayim, etc.? I agree that it is not the same. And yet, when one focuses on the Migdash and the meaning for the destruction, well, unfortunately, if anything, we're living through days.
Worse.
Yes. So that hasn't really changed. The reason for the Churban have not changed. And I'm sure that if you're watching now the news in Israel, all these demonstrations going on, Dafka in the 9 days, Dafka on Tisha B'Av, does not really solve the Sinat Chinam issue that existed in times of Bai Cheni.
Okay, Yeshua.